The Athletic.
Totally Football Show. Today it's a yin-yang, joy, pain, ears, press, transistor radio special from Leeds, where little Sam on jury service gets Big Sam sent down to Leicester. Dean Smith, Fox around, finds out. To Everton, where the roll of the dice pays off. There's Wembley news. Luton enter the Premier League through the playoffs rather than through someone's garden, the way they'll enter Luton. And much more as we round up a big weekend of action, plus a very special semi-final in the Intertotally. It's the Totally Football Show. Well, May 29th, 2023. And here in the studio, listener, we've got Tim Spears. Hello, Tim.
Hello.
Fresh back from Leeds.
Not so fresh, but I'm back.
Nice. Duncan Alexander's here too.
Hello.
All right, Duncan. What have you been up to this weekend?
I went to Arsenal, actually.
Did you?
Mm.
Certainly the fixture I would have picked.
Well.
Mm. We'll like hear about that.
Goals.
Or not. Although they're worth, like, yeah, five goals, mm. Yeah. And also, in the studio for the first time in 3.5 years, Daniel Storey.
Good morning.
Good morning to you, Daniel. Nice to see you in the flesh.
Very nice to be here.
Good. And you're in town for a few days to catch some big games at Wembley.
Yes. I did the Championship playoff final on Saturday and I'm at the League One playoff final today. Didn't go to the League 2 one on Sunday, but it didn't matter because it was exactly the same as Saturday's game.
Okay. All right. That must have been quite an atmosphere on Saturday.
Yeah. It's the best game to go to as a neutral because you kind of feel like you're very much sort of rubbernecking on joy and failure all at once. It's a playoff final weekend is the best weekend of the season by a mile for me. And having the Premier League final weekend as well in the middle makes it perfect.
Fantastic. We're hearing about lots of that. Premier League did come to a conclusion. It did its business. It shot its bolt this weekend. 38 goals, Duncan. Am I right in thinking that makes this the goaliest season ever of Premier League football?
Yeah, it's we got there in the end. We also needed one more unique scoreline to match the record for 25 in a season.
What's a unique scoreline?
Well, like 0-0 is one, and then 1-0. We had 24 different ones.
Oh, I see.
I suggested last week that maybe a 4-4 was on the cards because we hadn't had one since 2012. And lo and behold, on the South Coast, yeah. Southampton, our high-scoring, unusual scoreline friends, helped us out.
Indeed they did. The Madness at St Mary's, one of 10 matches played simultaneously at 4:30 yesterday. Among the big results, Man United confirming third spot by beating Fulham 2-1 and Newcastle only drawing at Stamford Bridge, Chelsea not losing that fixture. Arsenal in front of Duncan beating Wolves 5-0. Aston Villa claiming a Conference League spot with a 2-1 victory over Brighton, who also go into Europe, of course. And, perhaps more importantly, down the bottom, Leeds pumped by Spurs. Leicester with a brave final day win over West Ham, but none of that mattered because Everton were victorious against Bournemouth and stay up.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network and sponsored by LiveScoreBet. You can get the latest football betting odds at LiveScoreBet.com. It's over 18s only. Please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
I come to Doucouré. Well hit! Oh, yes! Oh, what a strike from Abdoulaye Doucouré that is! Salvation!
All right, Everton 1, Bournemouth 0. The key game in the relegation battle. Daniel, you were all over this. And what was, for a long spell of the game, a very nervous affair for the fans at Goodison, particularly after Leicester had taken the lead in their clash with West Ham through an excellent Harvey Barnes.
Yeah, there is nothing better than obviously transistor radio usage at football games on the final day, but yeah, also,
I just want to leap in there straight away. People who take transistor radios in this day and age to a football game, is it purely to get on telly?
No, I don't think so. No. It's quite hard to. I was at a different game, as mentioned, and I was finding it very hard to get any 4 to 5G coverage.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
It's awful.
So it was a lot of craning over necks to some people who had Wi-Fi logins.
Oh, really?
So,
okay.
Yeah.
I thought it was just the equivalent of wrapping a cardboard in tin foil.
No, I also think that live score apps now show you when there's been a goal, but you don't necessarily know if there's going to be a VAR check anymore. You don't know what type it is. Whereas on the radio, they will sort of say, oh, was it offside? And you can sort of think, well, I don't want to get excited yet.
Can you not just listen to the radio through your phone? But that's a coverage. Sorry, we better get back to your point. Sorry, people had transistor radios.
Yeah, and also there's the other staple, which is front row spectators slumped over through nerves, head in hands, over the little wall at the front of the stand. Perfect. Goodison is ideal for that. And yeah, there was a lot of that. Everton were really poor first half. They didn't really play with any urgency and were really nervous, understandably. And Bournemouth were had this kind of we've stayed up liberty on the counter-attack.
And when Leicester scored, was there a ripple that went through the crowd?
Absolutely, yeah. Mm. Yeah, 100%. Which is, yeah, that kind of nervous, quiet, oh my God, this is actually going to go wrong whisper is one of the great sounds of football, I think.
Right.
Well, it seemed like that was the key period of the whole game because Leicester were winning and Everton knew about it. And then Bournemouth had a couple of good chances, didn't they? And if you felt like if one of those had gone in just before half-time, I mean, Everton have only scored more than one goal at home on one occasion all season, which I think was back in like October against Palace. So if they needed to score twice in the second half, I mean, you wouldn't have fancied the chances.
It was a bit like a year ago at the other end of the table when City were losing to Villa and Liverpool couldn't get ahead. But you felt like if they had gone ahead there, it might have gotten more into City's heads. But yeah, I mean, as Daniel says, it's just the magic of the last day when the, you know, rumours, counter-rumours, batteries run out in your transistor.
Speaking of magic, what about Abdoulaye Doucouré?
Mm. Yeah, I mean, firstly to keep the ball down, because that's exactly the type of the shot that you see central midfielders sort of lash out with the laces and the kind of sort of scissor technique, and it just goes straight up in the air and high and wide and not very handsome. And yes, yeah, so to keep it down and also to get a little bit of shape on it. I know it did take a slight disappointing deflection off a defender's back.
Did it? I'm not sure that it did.
I think it did, but yeah. I don't think it would have done anything. Mark Travers was not for diving by that point. So, a brilliant goal. And then they just completely shut down the game. Not just the...
Well, they shut themselves down, but Bournemouth, that kind of allowed Bournemouth to come into it, didn't it?
Yeah, they were always going to sit back and defend that lead, right. Not just because Sean Dyche is their manager, but also the situation.
Right.
But they I love situations like this where the first half Everton fans were like booing the time waste from Bournemouth. Oh, they're staying down too long. The ball's out of play too long. And I honestly think in the last 25 minutes of the game, including injury time, the ball was in play for about 6 minutes.
Right.
And
injury time. So they're ahead, but a Bournemouth goal would completely wreck things. It would keep Leicester up in their place. And when the ball goes up, 10 minutes of time added on.
Yeah, and thankfully the ball was in play for about 45 seconds of it.
Tim wrote an excellent piece on The Athletic last week about time wasting and, you know, making the point that you only notice when it's affecting your own team and that no game shows that more than the Everton game, I think.
Well, I don't know. Roma's trip to Bayer Leverkusen was pretty state-of-the-art in those terms. But, yeah, and I mean, Doucouré magic, but Jordan Pickford. One save in particular on, I cannot think who, but somebody.
Yeah, like really strong hands pushing away. He more than the saves, just him falling on the ball and lying on it for...
I think if you're going to choose any goalkeeper for that scenario, both to save shots and to fall down dramatically... clutching the ball. I mean, Jordan Pickford is his moment, his special moment.
The happiest receiver of a yellow card in the Premier League this season as well for his little sort of scrap with Solanke. Yeah, they actually managed the game really well for a team that had so much on it.
Talking of keeping up with events in the game, did you see the woman who was looking at her phone when the Doucouré goal went in? Obviously, they cut to the crowd and everyone is going mad. And she kind of... hears the roar for the goal, kind of looks up, looks back down at her phone, looks up again and just sort of nods and like, oh yeah, we've scored, that's good. It's like
whispers to a friend, Everton scored.
Yeah.
Remarkable. In terms of the crowd reaction, delight at staying up, but there's still a lot of issues there. Post-game, the Everton fans were by no means satisfied with this outcome.
Yeah, absolutely. This is still a club that have spent £500 million on new players over an extended period of time, and you could probably pick five or six that have worked out of those players. There are huge issues to solve around financing of the new stadium. There are huge issues to solve about kind of bringing those disconnected, disparate elements of the club together, because they are absolutely not united at the moment. And we've got no idea what's going to happen with these charges over FFP limits.
Right.
Nothing... I think the front page of the Liverpool Echo this morning is kind of survival but not success. And I think that's exactly how fans see it. We did the necessary, but we should never have been here before. And if we don't do anything different, we will be here again.
But had they not done it, given that scenario, it could have been absolutely catastrophic.
And that was all visually summed up in one of the worst pitch invasions I've ever seen, where a couple of hundred were on the pitch, you know, to celebrate them staying up. But most fans were like, oh, come on. This is not success.
Right.
We should not be. Again, after last. Yeah, very different to last year. It wasn't as triumphant, was it?
Yeah.
Tim, you were at Elland Road where there was no pitch invasion.
There was one pitch invader.
Okay, yeah.
During the end of the game. The classic scenario of a steward running at full pelt on bad shoes and falling over as he tried to tackle him. And everybody was very happy at that point. There's a high point of the day, actually, for Leeds, which kind of shows you how it went for them. But no pitch invasion. There were an awful lot of stewards barricading certain parts of the ground to stop people getting on the pitch. But there was a lot of anger emanating onto the pitch from the stands.
Well, you were in the press box, which is very much in the thick of it.
It is. Yeah, there are certain press boxes, Millwall being one, Leeds being another, where you're sort of surrounded by fans, not necessarily surrounded by the family enclosure, the nice, but you know, there are hardcore fans yelling things around you, which makes it quite an interesting spectacle. But yeah, there's a real sort of mixture of emotions, to be honest. I mean, certainly no belief that they were going to stay up. I've never known Elland Road and surrounding areas, you know, so quiet before a game. It was silent in the streets an hour before kickoff. I was sort of out there to get some colour and some noise. And whenever somebody shouted something, it was very noticeable. They were just, they were, I mean, obviously given the predicament, but they didn't believe that, I don't think they believed that their team could win, let alone that Everton and Leicester couldn't win.
Right.
You know, such as the run that they've been on. And then there was an awful lot of gallows humour during the game, as you'd expect from Leeds fans.
I mean, 2 minutes in, Spurs score, and then it...
That's it. So that's it. So they did kind of rouse themselves at kickoff, as you'd expect, and then literally within 90 seconds, Harry Kane scores. And there was silence, because it's not a massive away end, and it's sort of out to your right from the press box at Elland Road. But it was one of those, you know, when a commentator says, a ground is silenced by an away team scoring, and it never is, because you can really hear the away fans. But it really was silence. You could hear, they were kind of stunned at, oh, for God's sake. That's it. And they were never really in the game after that, to be honest. So, yeah, the mood turned angry, you know, later in the piece.
Angry at who?
The board, the owners who were told to go home. In no uncertain terms, the team who were told they weren't fit to wear the shirt on many occasions. Not Big Sam. He's only taken charge of four games, and I think he's just tried to implement vibes, to be honest, rather than, you know, I mean, this week he brought in McAllister and Strachan and Eddie Gray to kind of give a motivational talk.
Didn't bring the goldfish back from the Ridsdale era.
and they were training on the pitch at Elland Road this week. I don't understand that.
Which
is
always hilarious, because in any drama about football, teams always train on the pitch as if that's what they do.
But the home form hasn't been an issue. They only lost six at home up until yesterday, so it wasn't like Elland Road was a real problem for them. But yeah, he hasn't managed to sort of coach them into a coherent unit. Even though he's had a few weeks there. But he avoided the anger. Weston McKennie got it more than anybody, actually.
Really?
So he was given the hook after an hour, and the boos started cascading down. I haven't seen Leeds for a few weeks, so I was surprised. Then they started chanting "you fat B-word," and I assumed, perhaps unfairly, that was aimed at Big Sam, by his very sort of nickname, a big man, and he'd made a substitution. But I asked my colleague, Phil Hay, you know, who's that for? He said, Weston McKennie, you know, because, you know,
chunky.
He could be seen as quite chunky. But yeah, that was an utterly mis- a lot of people were joining in, and a lot of boos for him, which kind of shows up how his loan spell from Juventus has gone, and also how recruitment has gone at Leeds in general, which has been their biggest problem long term, I think.
Right, but I mean, to be fair, Big Sam's only there 4 weeks. It's just when you come in saying that there is no one better than you and get 1 point from a potential 12.
The only thing I have an issue with is that you're not fit to wear the shirt. I mean, if there's anything we know about Leeds over the last 20 years, it's that those players are absolutely perfect for that shirt the way they've done this season. Ooh. Because, well, it's as if, exactly the same as Leicester, who we'll probably come on to, it's as if, like, there's somehow a VIP pass that if you consistently make wrong decisions, you'll still survive in the Premier League just because you are who you are and you've been who you are historically. And Leeds have got pretty much everything wrong. And down to recruitment in January, down to recruitment last summer, down to managerial appointments and sackings and timing of sackings. And you know, it goes right back to Andrea Radrizzani last summer saying, you know, it's impossible, but we'll be in this situation again. And you think, well, you've done nothing to address that. So, yeah, of course you'll be in this situation again, and yeah, worse.
I do, you know, I do feel sorry for the Leeds fans. They were even singing before kickoff yesterday there, which they hate the Premier League. And I don't think it's been very fun for them because they were promoted in an empty stadium. And then they finished ninth in an empty stadium. Yeah. And since then, it's been utterly miserable. And since Bielsa was sacked, they've only won 11 matches. Yeah. You know, so it hasn't been the fun ride that they waited so long for, and now they're back in the purgatory of the Championship. You know, I do have sympathy.
Hasn't been the fun ride that Leicester, for example, have had. A fun ride that has now come to a conclusion. So Gary Lineker is certainly sanguine about this.
Yeah.
Given the, you know, joys that he...
I agree with him, to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, as a supporter of a club smaller than Leicester, I mean, yeah, FA Cup, league title, Champions League quarterfinals, not counting the Community Shield, sorry. But that, you'd probably take that as a stint. I mean, obviously, there was that thing at the time when they won the league that their good form that kept them up the previous season coincided when, at the time, they respectfully reburied Richard III.
Right.
And if you think we've now got a king for the first time, and I did wonder whether there was some sort of psychological impact from that. The ley lines, the monarchist ley lines have combined to send Leicester down. But, you know,
they were king awful for most of the season as well.
Yeah, but they'll take it. I think more than Leeds, they've got a chance of bouncing back next season. I know that they've got a lot of players that, you know, and they're reconstruction. I think they were badly run this season in terms of recruitment and maybe sacked Rodgers too late or too early, depending on what you think. But, you know, they do still have owners that are committed. I think they need to get the managerial situation sorted. But I can, yeah. I mean,
what's going to happen there?
Well, I don't think Dean Smith is going
to... Dean Smith, who's the first manager to ever get relegated with two different sides in consecutive seasons in the Premier League.
Yeah, I mean, there was a sort of triangle of doom, wasn't there, yesterday, when you had Sean Dyche, Big Sam, Dean Smith. It was like a sort of almost the ending of an era of a certain type of English manager that comes in and firefights. And I think, OK, Dyche did keep Everton up, but they weren't super impressive under him in his spell. And, you know, there's talk he might not be there at Everton for the long term either. So, yeah, I don't know. I think Leicester have got a chance.
There's a lot to do, though, and there are a lot of players that are going to leave. You know, obviously Maddison, Barnes, Tielemans, Vardy, Evans. They've got the seventh highest wage bill in the league, I think I'm right in saying, as well. You know, didn't spend any money last summer. It's a huge rebuilding job. It was interesting that Leicester and Leeds were the sort of the last two to sack their managers. Both left it very late. Neither of those gambles paid off. You know, should they have stuck with who they had? Should they have gone earlier? I don't know, it's difficult.
The other thing, I mean, they ended up with this kind of ghost of Christmas past, present and future with Shakespeare and Dean Smith and John Terry.
Yeah.
As this sort of weird three-way management cabal. But the madder thing for me was that the end of Brendan Rodgers was always coming. It felt inevitable. Although they didn't want to sack him, it felt inevitable. And yet they spent two games with Adam Sadler and Mike Stoyle in charge.
They lost
at home to Bournemouth and at home to Villa. Mm. Now that's incredible that you can get into a situation where you didn't have a very obvious succession plan. You hadn't sorted it out. And that's what, for example, Aston Villa did. They knew who they wanted. They went out and got him and everything then turned in. I'm not saying that Dean Smith would necessarily have kept them up if he would have got the job then. But those two defeats were the first time that fans there really thought, I'm not sure the club knows what they're doing here.
Mm. I know this isn't how football works and league tables work, but if they'd have drawn those two games, they'd have stayed up.
Yeah, and also, you talk the fine margins of that. You know, Dyche will be congratulated keeping Everton up, but James Maddison misses a penalty when Leicester are 2-1 up against Everton at home. They end up drawing that game 2-2 and the gap is only 2 points between them.
Jordan Pickford makes a save against Leicester in that. Yeah.
Yeah. So that penalty save basically changes the whole picture of the relegation battle. So these are fine margins, and it seems hard to kind of damn Dean Smith and if you're lauding Sam Allardyce based on those 2 points. But the league table is a league table, and Leicester are where they deserve to be because, like Leeds, they made a series of really odd decisions.
And they also tried to play the percentages with that, you know, playing for a draw at Newcastle, which ultimately, you know, didn't pay off.
Was that last Monday? It was.
Yeah, so Dean Smith clearly decided, you know, we'll take a point and then we'll bank on Everton not winning on the final day. That's right. Very much how it seemed to me. You know, they didn't go for the win. I know they had a chance in injury
one
time.
Shot, but yeah.
One shot in 90 yeah. minutes.
But then, weirdly, in his other games, they were madly attacking and were like, you know, got over 2 XG away at City and stuff. So it's like he kind of went in, turned everything attacking metrics up to 11, and that didn't quite work. I don't know.
You mentioned sort of roller coaster. It's amazing. Like since 2000, they've won all three
Leicester's
major
a roller
English
coaster
trophies. they're one of only five clubs to win all three trophies. You know, this century. I think it's four relegations, three promotions, Champions League quarter final, Conference League semi final. You know, they've been to League One.
Yeah.
It's mad. It is mad.
Claudio Ranieri yesterday saying football, it can give you dreams, but it can also give you nightmares. And that sums it up pretty nicely. We'll just play out this section with a few memories of that Leicester roller coaster.
You never believe a story like this could happen.
Lorch Long trying to set Jamie Vardy away. And he's there. Oh, what a goal! Chance for Riyad Mahrez. Mahrez with the shot. He scores!
We are in Champions League. We are in Champions League, man.
What Leicester have done is give inspiration to every manager, player, supporter, all across the land.
And now we go straight away to try to win the title.
The ball in behind Damian Vardy! Hold the back page! Hold the front page! Leicester City are the champions of the Premier League! 5,000 to one shot! Adesso si.
This is the Totally Football Show, sponsored by LiveScoreBet. With BetBuilder from LiveScoreBet, you can combine markets from thousands of options to create your own bet on the biggest football fixtures in the Premier League, the Champions League, the EFL, and around the world. So if you think you can successfully pick the first goal scorer, the final score, the total number of corners, and whether there'll be a red card, then use BetBuilder from LiveScoreBet to make up to 6 selections and get a single bet with the combined odds. Or, if you can't make up your mind, you can choose from the pre-built quick bet options. BetBuilder from LiveScoreBet. Building a bet just got easier. Find out more at LiveScoreBet.com or by downloading the LiveScoreBet app on Android and iPhone. It's over 18s only. Full account terms apply. And of course, please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org. This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
So Leeds and Leicester go down along with Southampton. Coming the other way, joining Sheffield United and Burnley in promotion, are Luton Town, courtesy of Saturday's penalty shootout win over the remarkable Coventry. Daniel, you were there at Wembley.
Yeah, I was. I think this season, probably more than any other, has been defined by the clubs that make really sensible, long-term, strategic planning decisions. The Brightons of this world, your Lutons, succeeding and flourishing above, punching way above their weight. And those who make bigger clubs, who make bad decisions, falling by the wayside. And no club in the last 5 years has made better decisions than Luton Town.
Is that right?
That's absolutely
no
right.
No club has made better decisions.
Yeah, I firmly believe that because they have faced adversity way before that, serious adversity, which provided the kind of fuel for, you know, the financial collapse of 2008 and them going into non-league in 2009. But even in the last 5 years, they've lost Nathan Jones as manager twice, who was seen as the guy who was going to take them there. And both times they've reacted remarkably.
Every time he leaves the club, they get promoted.
Yeah, but he also, you know, look, I'm as fan of some Nathan Jones snark as much as the next man, but he did a really, really good job there and he put them in a position. But what they have is that they have the Brighton thing where when you lose a player or you lose a, and it's a Brentford thing as well, if you lose a player or you lose a manager, it doesn't matter because it's all part of a process whereby you bring the next person in and they can flourish. And that's exactly what happens at Luton.
Duncan, you were there the day they got relegated to non-league.
Yeah, they lost 1-0 to Wickham. And yeah, if you'd have told me, 14 years later that they'd be in the Premier League, I would have raised an eyebrow and ducked as the invective.
But if I was to say to you like now, like in 14 years' time, let's say, well, I mean, Wrexham are now up, but...
slightly different case, I think. Notts County may be more of a case.
Will be in the Premier League. Well, the other 14 thing is years is a fair
Luton arm. were broken financially at that point as well. Right. Scunthorpe United, isn't it?
Yeah, and all the stuff around it. And I mean, I'm sure people might have, if they hadn't before, this weekend finally found out what the entrance to Luton's away end looks like. Only been on the internet 4 trillion times. But they are a bit of a throwback club in that sense. And it is, I think, you know, the atmosphere in their semi-final second leg against Sunderland showed just how intense that place can be. And I think it will be, in terms of a sort of drama and storyline, I think it's, you know, it's going to be great. It's almost certain to be the Friday night live game on the start of the season.
How long do you think before Kenilworth Road becomes a bit of a nightmare as opposed to a quaint journey into football's past for the Premier League?
I saw a tweet. I think it was Seb Stafford-Bloor who tweeted, there's two kind of Premier League fans. There's a fan who thinks their team is going to win, beat Luton home and away 3-0, and there's one that's absolutely certain they're going to lose 1-0 to Luton with a Adebayo goal, probably in the sort of 75th minute header from across, because that's what they're set up to do. They are, you know, they are unashamed in their play. They did that against Coventry. They got ahead in the final in the first half an hour through that direct football because Coventry just had too many decisions to make and were making them badly. And Luton have fewer decisions to make because they know what they're going to do. They did crossfield passes. Mm. They try and get the either a knockdown header or a ball out wide and a cross into the box, and they create chances doing it. And they were the better team over the 135 minutes, whatever we played.
Right.
And they had 3 disallowed goals. Coventry stuck in well. And the one time that Gustavo Hamer and Victor Gyökeres combined, they created a chance and scored the goal. But I think Luton deserved it on the balance.
You mentioned the style of play from Luton and Adebayo, but his performance in the build-up to Jordan Clark's opening goal was quite magnificent.
Yeah, it was. Carl Morris wasn't quite at it, probably partly because his best friend is Tom Lockyer, who went off, obviously collapsed after 6 minutes and is thankfully seems well now. But Morris is the player who'd scored 20 goals from this season. Adebayo is kind of the foil for him. But that run down the left-hand side and the kind of twist, turn,
so he sombreros, whoever the Coventry defender is.
Yeah.
And then does a kind of Georgie Ware, I'll put the ball past you one way and run past you the other. And then he does, I don't know, would you call it like a Ronaldo chop?
Which yes, twice, but a double chop, one way and then back.
So with your back, the back of your...
Eventually he's got on his right foot.
Right.
Lays it across to Jordan Clark, who also, his touch is fantastic to his kind of composure, and then just lashes it past Ben Wilson. Coventry's goal was also pretty good, quite similar. Mm. Less of the, you know, Gyökeres did more in terms of pace than skill, I think, to get in his position. But again, Gustavo Hamer's finish. I thought we were going to get a Sheringham to Shearer kind of layoff, Euro 96 against the Dutch, because there was another man at the back post, but he just guided it into the corner. Two really good goals in what was a very frantic game. I mean, the last extra time in the last 20 minutes of normal time was kind of like sort of British bulldog. Both teams were sort of running at each other in turn and hoping something would happen.
And then it went to penalties. How would you describe it? The richest game of football in the world.
Yeah, that's what they say.
It's what, 200 million riding on those
170, I think, first year, 290 in total if you stay up after your first season is the latest.
That's a big price tag on a successful spot kick.
Yeah, and they were taken brilliantly, the first 11. There's no other way to settle it, but yeah, really felt for Kantapi Darbo. He was the sixth penalty taker. He probably didn't think he'd take one. It was a genuinely awful penalty. And from that end, the Coventry fans, as soon as the ball was kicked, you could see, yeah, the trajectory on that doesn't look good. It's going really high. And yeah, I have the experience, thankfully, of being successful as a fan in a playoff final, and it was amazing. But there can be nothing worse. I was on the train back to Loughborough with lots of Coventry fans who were using that route and across, and they're just sat there broken, absolutely broken, because they will sell Gyökeres and they will sell Hamer this summer. They are their two best players. They'll get good money for both, I think. But it doesn't quite feel like Luton, where they invested a bit more and then went again. I'm not sure if Coventry can do that. The Championship next season is going to be full of some huge reputation clubs. I just hope, you know, they've got a new owner, so they're in a good place. I just hope they get to kind of push on again.
I mean, Luton's a remarkable story, but also Rob Edwards, who I got to know quite well when he was a coach at Wolves for a number of years. His first managerial job ended 5 years ago in National League North with Telford United by mutual consent, with them mid-table in the division. And then he sort of went to the FA and honed his abilities as a coach. Landed at Forest Green 2 years ago in League Two, and now you know he's in the Premier League as well, having been sacked by Watford, of course, earlier in the season. But I think he's one to watch as a coach as well. I mean, he talks an exceptional game. People will really see this next season, and he's very charismatic. Very good man manager, possible pin-up material. He was very, very, very popular in that regard at Wolves, for sure. I don't know if people pin up pictures anymore, but
do with Roy Edwards, definitely. No, but you're totally right. I mean, I think, you know, give it 6 months and some big club is in trouble. I think, you know, there could be a touch of the Graham Potter-esque coveting going on.
Magnificent.
On that point, I think it is interesting, both with the penalties now and with this sort of generation of young English coaches, that, you know, you go back 20 years and it was like, well, English people can't learn to coach football, and what, we can't practice penalties because what's the point? It's a lottery. But lo and behold, do both and it works.
There you go. The Hatters, the 51st club to compete in the Premier League. They will be next season. And it's only taken them 9 years to get from the National League to the Premier League, which is remarkable. That's the joint fastest anyone's come up five tiers of football. The other similarly rapid risers were
the Crazy Gang.
Indeed so.
Although a lot of people ignoring Wigan, I think, this weekend.
Saying, oh, yeah?
Because they obviously went from non-league to the Premier League. Seem to have been overlooked, but there you go.
How about that? So it's going to be interesting to see Premier League sides turning up at Kenilworth Road, something that will be happening in about 2 months' time.
75 days, I think.
75 days. Doesn't give you long, actually, to sort yourself out.
The thing that always catches me off guard, more than that short timescale, is that the fixtures come out on June the 15th, which is 2 weeks from now.
Like, that's both simultaneously a very exciting moment and the dullest thing ever.
Yeah.
Who we got on April
the 5th? Oh, ages.
Yeah. But also, the other thing, obviously, everyone's going on and on about the away end entrance at Luton Town. That's not the concern. If you're over 5'7", you can't sit down anywhere in Luton, because they just basically bolted seats onto a quite narrow terrace. So, yeah, it's a whole new knee game for some Premier League fans.
Finally, some respect for the short man.
Nice. So we've got one more playoff to go, and that's coming up today, Monday, as we record this, and that will see
South Yorkshire takeover, Sheffield Wednesday versus Barnsley.
Boom.
Yeah, I think there's an outpouring of love and support for Darren Moore at Sheffield Wednesday, given some of the things he's been through very recently in terms of kind of racist abuse, and he's a deeply lovely man, which helps. But Barnsley are a great story as well under Michael Duff, Championship manager 01-02's Michael Duff, who learned his stuff at Cheltenham and then got the promotion to Barnsley. And there were some kind of concerns whether that was a bit early, but he's done a brilliant, brilliant job there. He's another of those kind of up-and-coming English coaches.
Magnificent. We'll hear what happens in that in Thursday's Totally Football show. Before that, on Tuesday, you can catch our Euro edition previewing the Europa League final between Sevilla and Roma, and also talking about the remarkable scenes at Signal Iduna Park Saturday afternoon, where 80,000 stood silent and wondered what on earth had just happened. We'll be finding out from Raphael Honigstein, as well as catching up with James Horncastle, Alvaro Romeo, maybe Julian Rons as well. He's a busy guy. But anyway, there's that. You can also catch up with the Athletic Women's Football Podcast, which will be detailing the final day of the season in the Women's Super League. And more mic drop action from Chelsea. Next up on this Totally Football show, back to the Premier League.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show with James Richardson, sponsored by LiveScore Bet. You can get the latest football betting odds at livescorebet.com. It's over 18s only. Please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
Premier League, apart from the relegation battle, the big question, I guess, was who would get into the Conference League between Villa and Spurs, and lo, it was Villa. 2-1 winners against Brighton. How much longer can Villa maintain this extraordinary upward trajectory? What's their kind of upper limit, do you think?
I think that they've got a good manager for the Conference League. I think Unai Emery will honour it. I think they obviously, there's talk they've got a fair amount of money to spend this summer. It's hard to say. I mean, Emery does have a habit of starting very well at clubs. He went on that long unbeaten run at Arsenal and then it faded a little bit. Mm. But it's just, football's often quite vibes-based, isn't it? And you look at Villa now and everything just clicks. You know, that was their 18th win of the season yesterday. They've only had more in the Premier League era in 92-93, when obviously they nearly won the title, and that was a 42-game season. So it won't go as smoothly next season, all season, as it has done, but, you know, they were so playing under their potential under Steven Gerrard. That,
right. 17th in the table when he was sacked in October.
Yeah, I mean, they are ridiculously ambitious, and like Duncan says, you know, they do have the money to back it up and the manager. And I've seen a few people say, oh, you know, they're maybe in a bit of trouble next season because they'll have some long trips on Thursday nights, and, you know, you see what happened with West Ham this season. But Emery's the master at that. You know, people remember the Europa League wins and the Champions League semi-finals and whatever. But every season he did that with Sevilla or Villarreal, they finished in good positions in La Liga, never lower than seventh. So he can combine both, and I think he will with some smart additions this summer. The noise sounded incredible just on the highlights from Villa Park yesterday. An astonishing contrast with the game that I was watching in terms of Spurs fans who probably didn't even want to be in the competition.
Right.
And there were huge celebrations at Villa Park at being back in Europe, you know. And I think as West Ham have showed, you know, they could go pretty far in that competition next year, for sure.
They have players who, which is odd for Villa, a big club that people generally take notice of, and I wonder if people have just sort of slept on them a little bit, maybe even opposition teams. They've got players in that team, like Douglas Luiz is the perfect example. Like, he's a central midfielder, a really good kind of energetic tackling midfielder that they got from Manchester City. He scored 6 goals and got 6 assists this season. He's still doing all the tackling, and yet no one really talks to him like a sort of Moses Caicedo or Declan Rice or Alexis McAllister. But Villa were always a club where big name players were at, and you took notice of them. And I wonder, like, between sort of players like him and Jacob Ramsey and Ollie Watkins and Mings back in form,
Emi Martinez, World Cup winning goalkeeper.
Yeah, there's a lot of players there who people have just sort of, oh yeah, they're at Villa and they'll stay at Villa. And there doesn't seem to be people targeting those players, which is a brilliant bit for the rest of the summer.
There's always a weird half-life in football where people's opinions of teams and clubs takes a few seasons to catch up. And I think people are still very much embedded in that Villa era when they were scoring sort of 29 goals a season, just escaping,
Poor
then
Lambert
they went
Villa.
Down. Yeah. And I think, you know, people haven't really, they've seen the results, but then maybe not up to speed with just how good they are or have been.
On Emery, he made a number of excellent decisions this season, but the bravest of them was to completely bin Philip Coutinho off. He started one game under Emery in the league.
What happens to him, do you think?
Well, they gave him a 4-year contract on around 120,000 a week, reportedly. So they could do with shifting him. But it will take, you know, he's not old enough probably to go back to Serie A. Is that the fit? But then who's got the money to? He's already taken a 71. He's already taken one 70% wage cut, I think, from Barcelona to Villa. So he might have to do I can't imagine him wanting to do another one if he's under contract. So that is a thing to solve. But by building the team around Buendia rather than trying to get both of them in the same team, it's allowed Ramsey and McGinn to push forward. It's allowed Watkins to stay central.
He did the same with Ings as well, didn't he? I mean, he chose Watkins and he got rid of Ings. And I mean, I don't think there are always seasons like this where a team goes on a late run, but this is one of the most startling and remarkable. And I was really pleased that they got seventh because, like Tim said, Spurs would have just been stroppy about it, whereas Villa will embrace it.
Well, Spurs forfeited the competition the last time they were in it, which kind of shows you their priorities.
Mm, indeed. Villa seventh, then Spurs finish eighth. Brighton in sixth place, their highest finish ever. So the rest of the weekend's games then were largely meaningless, except for sporting spectacles in themselves, which is ultimately all football really is, I guess. It's worth exploring a little bit. What on earth happened at St Mary's, where Liverpool went 2-0 up, Saints then transformed and scored 4 unanswered goals to go 4-2, before Liverpool then came back and made it 4-4 to Duncan's delight.
Mm. Yeah, some terrible defending from both teams. It was Jordan Henderson was already on the beach, literally, at one point. But yeah, I mean, just you do get these games. I mean, the highest scoring day in Premier League history ever. It was the last day ish of the first season in the Premier League, and this is another one to chalk up to that sort of tradition. Really, Liverpool had 30 shots, which is their most ever in an away game recorded. Yeah. I don't think it really helps either side. Southampton going to the Championship. Liverpool, yeah, you've still got defensive issues. I mean, 47 goals let in this season is not great. But, yeah, I mean, fun for the attackers at least.
Roberto Firmino scoring again in his final game as a Liverpool player after his farewell goals at Anfield the previous weekend. And I guess, yeah, Southampton to go down.
It is a tradition, as Duncan knows only too well, about these crazy last day scorelines. It was the 5-5 West Brom Man United.
10 years ago, yeah.
I remember Spurs beating Leicester 5-4 on the last day.
Middlesbrough beat Stoke Liverpool
8-1. That was Alfonso Alves, wasn't it?
Does this happen in European leagues as well, or is it just a Premier League thing?
Well, I mean, traditionally in Italy,
some big 2-1s in Serie A.
There would be a lot of 0-0 and 1-1s, the kind of so-called white draws where both teams are happy with a point.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly this weekend, it was, I think, possibly more high scoring, in fact. I think it was one goal more scored in Serie A than there was this weekend in the Premier League. So we're not quite, we've got one more round to go there. But it is all largely settled. We'll be discussing all of this, of course, in Tuesday's show. But yeah, madcap action is very much a Premier League trademark. And we certainly got it at St Mary's. 5 goals, meanwhile, for you, Duncan, at the Emirates.
Yeah. Arsenal, all the pressure was off, and they looked like a really, really good football team. Really good. Saka was brilliant. Played yet again, even though he was apparently injured in the week, still came back. Spent like 80 games in a row, I think he's played in. And then, obviously, the big kind of talking point of the day was Granit Xhaka, who was expected to leave. He got an amazing reception before the game. He got an amazing reception after scoring the first goal, and he got another one, and he got substituted and got a standing ovation. And it was, he was great. And it was, when you think of some of the ovations or not he's got at that stadium in his career there, it was a lovely sort of story. The Arsenal fans were singing, "We want you to stay," which I thought was a bit strange because it does feel like a good point for both parties to move on. But Wolves, sorry, Tim, but they were... that was not a joined up performance. They were just, looking at TripAdvisor mid game, I think. So
And it sounds like Julian Lopetegui might flick onto right move straight afterwards.
I don't know. It's a bit of a strange situation there. He says he's confused about about financial fair play, as are a lot of clubs. But yeah, Wolves spent 100 million net spend this season. I mean, obviously that's not sustainable for a club that doesn't have the stadium or the.
They really don't feel like a club that spent a lot of money, though.
They have.
Yeah, they've spent a lot of money on players who've done absolutely nothing, like Mateus Cunha and Mateus Nunes, who've just done absolutely. That was about almost 100 million.
That game yesterday.
Yeah, he strolled through the season. But yeah, it's a strange one. Lopetegui kind of saying he wasn't aware of these issues and that it might be a tight summer. When George Mendes is his agent, who does know a bit about Wolves' finances and the inner workings of the club, so I'm amazed that when he was appointed at the end of last year, they didn't have the discussion about what might happen if we stay up in the summer. I think it's just horseplay.
And it's a big old summer for Wolves, isn't it? It's an end of an era summer with Neves probably almost certain to leave, Moutinho, Jimenez, Traore.
To be fair to him. He does seem to have a particular hatred of Arsenal, and he did spend most of the game trying to wind up everyone, which was,
Well, that was a stadium where he fractured his skull, of course. So yeah, I don't think it's certainly not happy memories for him.
Yeah,
lots of tears amongst the Wolves fans and players. End of an era, but they've, like Villa, they've got a very good manager, and if they get recruitment right this summer, they'll be top half next season. That's how good they should be.
I mean, just on recruitment, it was quite telling to me as well. I thought, Trossard was great again. He's got 12 assists this season, second only to De Bruyne. Obviously got a hat-trick for Brighton away at Liverpool. You think back to January and the Arsenal fans were were kind of wailing that they only got Trossard and Jorginho. And Jorginho, they've both been really good. You know, they didn't cost them that much. It's like recruitment is not a simple thing of pay the most money, get the best players. It is, it's about finding people that can fit into your system. And, you know, I think both Trossard and Jorginho will obviously play a pretty pivotal role for Arsenal next season.
Okay. Along with perhaps one or two new arrivals. I mean, how certain are we about Declan Rice coming in?
It seems that if Arsenal stump up the money, then Rice is going to be allowed to make his own choice. And from what we hear, he's leaning towards Arsenal.
Right. Is that a direct Xhaka replacement?
Yeah. I mean, he's turned into a... Him and Xhaka have kind of almost been on this similar journey where they started out as holding players and then have turned into these kind of forward-thinking players as much. I think last season was Rice's kind of... I'm now going to be this progressive ball carrier. I think his like carrying distance was off the charts compared to recently. Now it's all about his kind of late runs, and he's touching the ball more than ever in the final third. He's basically turned into the complete central midfielder, which he's only 24.
he's like Roy Keane was, I think. Yeah. Almost. That's the comparison I think when I see him play now. And I think, you know, it's funny. I think fans from a lot of the bigger clubs in the Premier League 2 years ago, if they were linked with Rice, kind of shrugged a little bit, and now everyone really wants him, and I think it's probably justified.
Very nice. Brentford have done the double over Man City. Woo! Pep's side possibly had their eyes on other fixtures, but still fantastic stuff from the Bees, who had previously beaten them at the Etihad. Ethan Pinnock with the goal, which is birthday today. Happy birthday to Ethan and anyone whose birthday it is on the 29th of May. There you go. City win the title by 5 points. Any words on Brentford, or do you want to talk about Chelsea, Newcastle, or Crystal Palace, Nottingham Forest?
Should talk about the incredible run of London teams in mid-table.
All right, then.
You've got Spurs in 8th, Brentford 9th, Fulham 10th, Palace 11th, Chelsea 12th, Wolves, not in London, 13th, and then West Ham 14th. So, I mean, just merge all the teams into one. You'd win the league.
A couple of 1-1 draws, perhaps, to finish off then. Chelsea not losing against Newcastle, and who finished 27 points ahead of them. Good Lord. Despite Chelsea spending more money this season than any football club in the world have ever spent in one such period.
Pound for pound, the worst season in Premier League history,
I'd say so. Yeah.
Worst managerial appointment probably as well.
5 points for Lampard, 38 goals in 38 games.
Well, someone posted the table since Lampard took over. I think it was Colin Miller at the Mirror yesterday, and Chelsea would be on 5 points in that particular table in the relegation zone.
That's the he also did a my laptop blew up, so I don't have this. Yeah. He did a swing which has the most improved and
Newcastle,
least improved.
Yeah, Newcastle are the king of swing with +22.
Okay,
Man United +17, which is surprising, perhaps
shows how bad they were last season. Villa with 16, which given that Emery took over when they were I think 12 points from 13 games. Is extraordinary there. And then the kind of overachievers, Arsenal, Brentford and Palace.
And down the other end?
Only six Premier League clubs with more points than last season, which in my head feels statistically odd. But
yeah.
Only six Premier League clubs have got more points this season than last.
Yeah, which I suppose is a reflection of the three promoted clubs staying up, which doesn't normally happen.
Yeah, true.
Who's at the bottom of this, of Colin Miller's swing table?
The pound for pound worst team ever.
Chelsea.
-30.
Liverpool -25. But that again, that reflects over performance last season, I suspect. Mm. And then Leicester, West Ham, Southampton, Spurs. Very much the sorry lot.
We can't leave the Premier League weekend and the final table without citing Michael Cox's delight, the fact that the 10 teams in the top half all finish with a positive goal difference and the 10 teams in the bottom half finish with a negative goal difference. I guess it's quite an indication of sporting success.
Well, it's neat and it hasn't happened before.
Really?
So, yeah. So, because you always get like a Norwich coming third on -4 or, you know, some sort of anomaly. But yeah, I was trying to put the season into perspective. It's been good, but not... It's not an all-timer. It's not a sort of 2013-14.
Do you not think?
No, if the title race had gone a bit further,
okay,
I think maybe it could have crept up there. But it just, other than the relegation, everything was a little bit settled. And I don't think City were quite as good as they have been in previous seasons. Obviously,
really?
Yeah.
I think there are more teams who would be less happy with how their season's gone than would have been happy. And I think for an all-timer, you need to have more overachieving happy fans. Yeah. The relegation battle was fascinating. If you'd have said at the start of the season to, for example, a Forest fan, Fulham and Bournemouth are both going to comfortably stay up, then you'd have gone, well, we're in serious, serious trouble here. So that was really engaging, that teams who made bad decisions went down.
It's been a sort of season of mismanagement. I think people worried about or wondered how the World Cup would impact a season which, you know, never happened before. And I think it turned out that it messed a lot of teams' planning up. And, you know, your Wolves and your Villas, who did the change before the World Cup, they were okay. And then others kind of left it too late.
Tim, have you got any what the season was thoughts?
I thought it was all right. I was surprised you said Man City not as good as in the past. I thought last 2 months they've been as good as I've ever seen a Premier League team play, maybe.
Yeah, I'm just sort of basing it slightly on them not reaching 90 points, which for them feels like a sort of bare minimum. But I mean, they have been good in the run-in. But it took them a long... There were a lot of games in the autumn where they really were sort of struggling to find any sort of rhythm.
Yeah, I do think the World Cup had an impact either side of the tournament for a lot. I mean, if you remember at the time, we were talking about players not going in for tackles and players sort of saving themselves for the tournament. I think Man City probably had more. They had more than any other Premier League team involved. It's definitely had a huge impact, and probably the repercussions still haven't been fully felt in terms of player burnout. You know, what do clubs do this summer in terms of how they prepare for next season? Do they give players more time off? It's been a crazy season for players. Especially the ones who went deep into the tournament.
75 days, it all kicks off again. Quick word on Nottingham Forest, Daniel.
No, the best thing about the weekend is that after the Arsenal game, the African players in the dressing room started singing Waka, the 2010 Shakira
Waka Waka, this time for Africa.
And now it's become a kind of unofficial Forest anthem. Fans were singing it for about 45 minutes, just non-stop in the away end at Palace, apparently. And sort of loads of messages from Palace fans saying, I've now got that song in my head for the next 3 months. Thanks very much. So yeah, Waka Waka has become the Forest anthem.
Oh, nice. Next up on this Totally Football show, we've got some red-hot semi-final action for you with the Intertotally Cup, which is down to the final four.
It's time for the Intertotally Cup, with proceeds going to Prostate Cancer UK. To find out more about Prostate Cancer UK's work in football, join Prostate FC, the biggest team in football taking on the most common cancer in men. Save lives from the pitch, the sofa and the stands. Visit prostatecanceruk.org/prostatefc.
All right, Intertotally time. Semi-finals getting underway. Michael Cox and Tom Williams will be having transistor radios pressed to their heads right now to hear the outcome of today's first semi-final. Who's in it? Let's find out.
Up first, he's the New York Times multi-award winning soccer correspondent with 238,000 followers on Twitter, but only 5,743 on Insta. Doing it for the teenagers, he is content machine Rory Smith.
All right, Rory Smith.
That's my music. How are you doing?
Yeah, no, very well. How are you, sir?
I'm all right. I'm joined actually by my son for this morning's quiz.
Oh wait,
he's gonna help me. He's five.
Still, he might be a five-year-old prodigy, Rory, with the kind of DNA you've bequeathed him. Tim Spears, you've encountered Rory in a quiz forum in the course of this year's Intertotally, haven't you?
Knocked me out of sudden death. Should have been me.
Yeah, and then you took care of Sasha Gurionov as well, didn't you, Rory?
Yeah, Sasha kind of collapsed mentally.
You sound very chipper ahead of this semi-final.
There's no pressure on me. You know, Charlie's job is the collation and wrangling of facts. So to be honest, he'll have to take a long, hard look at himself if he doesn't win. I'm a sort of airy...
Right. Vibes has been the buzzword today. Is that
exactly.
You?
Exactly. Yeah, just getting by on vibes. Happy to be here. No pressure. Feel like I've already kind of exceeded expectations.
It's a day out in the sun until that last penalty goes wide. And then, Rory... Well, we'll see anyway. As you mentioned, your opponent today is... the ubiquitous producer Charlie. Here's his intro.
And his opponent, finally allowing himself the limelight. He finished fourth in the 2021 Opta Quiz, but doesn't like to talk about it.
doing it for the common man, he is producer Charlie.
Listen, a slight pause because producer Charlie's just had to, watch out, mind your head, just had to scurry into the studio from his production booth to actually take part in this quiz. The legendary digital botherer of pies everywhere, producer Charlie, takes his seat. Charlie Jones, thank you for being with us.
Hello.
Charlie, you put out Duncan Alexander early doors just to lay down a bit of a marker.
And then me.
And then you.
Yeah, this feels like it's been set up at our
This
expense.
Is like the Red Wedding, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Crikey. Charlie, though, one of the remarkable things about your victory over Duncan was the fact that you didn't even realise you'd done it.
So
you were
in
that
the zone,
focused.
Isn't it?
Yeah. And then you put out the reigning champion. So
yeah, I've seen as obviously working as a producer, I've seen this competition change people's lives, and I never thought it would change mine.
Right.
But here we are.
Okay. Well, getting to the semi-final is one thing. Getting to the final may prove another. Michael Cox or Tom Williams, of course, are waiting for whoever gets through today in that ultimate quiz test. Whoever does prove victorious today will also receive £10, as usual, from LifeScore Bet to put on the wager of their choice, and any winnings from that going to Prostate Cancer UK. What would be your bet, producer Charlie?
I would go for Man City to beat Man United 3-0 in the FA Cup final.
Very specific. And you, Mr. Rory Smith?
I would go for Manchester City to beat Inter Milan 3-0 in the Champions League final.
All right. Sounds entirely plausible. Very good. Well, we've made, this being the semi-finals, we've made it 20% tougher by the simple expedient of adding one more question. So six demanding tests of your football knowledge await. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
All right, Charlie. All right. Charlie, here comes your question one. Which member of Bayern's 2012-13 treble winners would go on to be relegated from the Premier League in 2018? He won the treble with Bayern in 2012-13. 5 years later, he found himself relegated from the Premier League. Who is he?
Is it Eric Max? No, it's not. It's not that. That's a bad guess.
Have you got an answer for us, Charlie Jones?
I don't think I do. No, I don't have an answer. I'll say Dante. Dante is wrong. But...
is wrong. The answer is Jadon Shaqiri.
Of course, yeah.
There you go. Rory, chance to take an early lead in this semi-final. Your question is, which member of Inter's 2009-10 treble winners would go on to be relegated from the Premier League in 2013?
Ooh, that's a long time ago, 2013.
It
I can't
is.
Remember anything happened in 2013. No, not Cambiasso. The only other players from that side I can remember are Diego Milito and Samuel Eto'o. It's neither of them. Ultimately, I think I don't know.
Prepare to kick yourself. Do you want to just ask a son?
Ed, who was relegated? Who won the treble with Inter and then was relegated from the Premier League?
Inter Milan.
That's right. Yeah. No, he doesn't know either.
Prepare to kick yourselves collectively when I reveal the answer is Julio Cesar.
Oh, of course. Yeah,
the big keeper. All right, question two. So all square on absolutely nothing then after the first set of questions. Here comes question two. Rory, you go first. For which MLS club does Christian Benteke play? You're from New York. You should know this.
I am famously from New York. I am going to say, with no real hope or expectation, Sporting Kansas City.
Is incorrect. It's DC United. Charlie Jones, for which MLS club does Giorgio Chiellini play?
Oh, that's easier. That's much easier. Come on.
LA City.
Is incorrect. It's LAFC.
Ah.
So nobody's got any answers right yet.
It's a tactical 0-0 draw, this.
On to question three, see if anyone can get a point here. Rory, I'm going to give you a list of things that have happened in a certain year. I'd like to know which year it was. Okay, so England fans caused the abandonment of a friendly against Ireland at Lansdowne Road. The European Court of Justice made the Bosman ruling. Uruguay won the Copa America. And Middlesbrough signed Juninho. What year was that?
So it's mid-90s. My instinct is that the Bosman ruling, I've always thought was... So I thought Lansdowne Road was 95. And I thought the Bosman ruling was 95. But then I thought Argentina won the Copa America in 1995. Or did they win the Copa America in 93? 1995.
Is correct. All right, Charlie Jones, pressure on then. Here comes a list of things that happened in a certain year. Which year was it? Alex Ferguson announced he would be retiring from Manchester United at the end of the following season, only to later change his mind. Glenn Hoddle became Tottenham manager. Colombia won the Copa America. And Frank Lampard signed for Chelsea. What year was that?
2001.
Is correct. Still all square then as we head into the final three questions. Charlie, who is missing from this list of the last six permanent West Ham managers? Avram Grant, Sam Allardyce, David Moyes, Manuel Pellegrini, and David Moyes again. Somebody's missing from the middle of that list. Who is it?
Can I have the names again, please?
Of course. Avram Grant, Sam Allardyce, then our missing man, then David Moyes, then Manuel Pellegrini, and then David Moyes again.
Slaven Bilic.
Is correct. Very impressive. Rory, can you correctly identify the missing man from this list of the last six permanent Newcastle United managers? Chris Hughton, Alan Pardew, then our missing man, then Rafa Benitez, then Steve Bruce, and then Eddie Howe. So after Alan Pardew and before Rafa Benitez,
Sam Allardyce.
Is incorrect. Oh. Steve McLaren.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Steve McLaren. All right, a one-point lead then for Charlie Jones with two questions to go. Rory, question five. Four English teams have reached the Champions League or European Cup final but never won the competition. Can you name three of those four?
Leeds United, Arsenal. And Tottenham Hotspur.
Is correct. Do you know who the other one are?
Not.
I think you do.
It is not immediately apparent.
I mean, it kind of is.
To me. Hang on. My instinct would be to say Manchester City.
Is correct.
Yeah.
Is correct. All right, Charlie, he's level with you. What are you going to do about that? As I ask you which three teams have beaten Liverpool in Champions League or European Cup finals. Three times it's happened. We want all three of them.
So it's Real Madrid, Juventus, and... Milan.
Correct. Still a one-point lead as we head into the final question of this semi-final. Rory, this to level it and force a tiebreaker. It's a who am I question. I managed three clubs in my homeland, winning the league title with all three of them. I won the Champions League with one of those clubs. I also managed Real Madrid. I've managed two international sides, but not that of my home country. Who am I? Do you want the list of... Do you want that?
Yeah, you might need to do the achievements again. You managed three clubs in their home country.
Three clubs from their home country and won the league title with all three of them and also won the Champions League with one of them. They also managed Real Madrid, this figure, and managed two international teams, but not the international team of their home country. Do you know who that is?
I think it might be Jupp Heynckes.
It's Fabio Capello.
Oh.
It's Fabio Capello, and that means, Charlie Jones, that whatever happens with your who am I question, you are very much a Intertotally Cup finalist. Woo! This is the bit where you go woo and stuff.
Woo, indeed.
Yeah. Are you pumped for that? Are you excited?
I feel it's quite a ropey performance from me today, I felt. I'm worrying about the potential final, to be honest.
Are you?
It's been a very nervy semi-final.
It has been nervy, you're right, Rory. Yeah. It's been two players maybe daunted by the occasion.
Do you think? Yeah, because I didn't feel the questions were necessarily harder, just from a kind of...
No.
Pretty tough.
No, yeah. But do you want your final question?
Yeah, go on.
So who am I, Charlie? I played the majority of my career in the Premier League for two clubs, making the most appearances for my hometown club. I never won the Premier League. I did win the Champions League, but not with either of those two Premier League sides that I mentioned. I played for England at three major tournaments, including Euro 96. Who am I?
Steve McManaman.
Yes. Yeah, pressure off and boom.
Yeah.
In like a fox. Well, I suppose it would be more out like a fox this weekend, wouldn't it? But anyway, in like a rapier. Congratulations, Rory. Fantastic stuff. Thank you so much for joining us.
No, it's a pleasure. Well done to Charlie.
Thank you, Rory.
Our salute to your young assistant. What name does he go by?
He goes by Ed.
Ed.
He is wearing full Paris Saint-Germain kit.
Right. Excellent. Which,
if anything, is why he's fallen at the semi-final stage.
Congratulations, Mr. Jones. You're through to the final of the Intertotally Cup. And if you think that producer Charlie is onto a winner with his bet, you'll find the very latest odds on livescorebet.com or the LiveScoreBet app. It's over 18s only. Full account terms apply. And of course, please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
Very, very nice, Rory. I do hope you enjoy the rest of your bank holiday together and look forward to hearing from you soon.
Thank you very much. I'm very much Team Charlie for the final.
Excellent. All right. Well, we'll be finding out who Team Charlie will be facing in that final in Thursday's Totally Football Show when Tom Williams and Michael Cox go at it over six questions. Brilliant. That brings us to the end of today's show, though. So many thanks to producer Charlie for his many roles, to Duncan Alexander, Daniel Story and Tim Spears. And you, listener, fill in your name here. And I hope you have a great week until we're back. It's not long until Tuesday's brilliant Euro show. It's going to be an absolute cracker, so do join us for that, even if you don't generally partake. But somewhere or other, we'll catch up with you soon. And for now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally. The Totally Football Show is an Athletic Media Company production and sponsored by LiveScore Bet. Get the latest football betting odds at livescorebet.com. It's over 18s only. Please bet responsibly and be gambleaware.org.
The Athletic.